If you know my memoirs, you know him. He and I had been subalterns in Cardigan's regiment 9 years before. On the occasion when I fought a memorable duel, he had agreed to ensure that my opponent's pistol was loaded only with blank, so that I had survived the meeting with credit. I had cheated him out of his payment, and there had been nothing he could do except make empty threats of vengeance. After that, our ways had parted, and now, here he was, like a corpse at a christening. Of course, he still couldn't harm me, but it was a nasty turn, just the same. "Hello, Flash," says he, sauntering up. "Still campaigning, I see." And he made his bow to Miss Fanny while Dubley presented him.
"Most honoured to know you, sir,"
says this Dubley. He was a fattish, whiskered creature with muff written all over him.
"Heard so much. Delighted to see you here, eh, Fan?"
And she, cool piece that she was, chattered gaily about what a jolly picnic we had made. Presently, he led her indoors, leaving Bryant and me by the horses. "Spoiled the chase for you, has he, Flash?" says he, with his spiteful little grin. "Devilish nuisance, these fiancés. Sometimes as inconvenient as husbands, I dare say." "I can't imagine you'd know about that," says I, looking him up and down. "When did Cardigan kick you out, then? For he wasn't wearing cherry-picker rig." I could see I'd touched him on the raw. "I transferred to the 8th Irish," says he. "We don't all leave regiments as you do, with our tails between our legs." "My, my, Tommy," says I, grinning at him. "Feeling the pinch, were we? I always thought the 11th was too expensive for you. Well, if you can't come up to snuff in the 8th, you can always take up pimping again, you know." In the old days in Canterbury, when he was toadying me, I'd thrown a few guineas his way in return for his services as whoremonger and general creature. He fell back a step. "Damn you, Flashman," says he. "I'll bring you down yet." Now, if I'd been as wise then as I am now, I'd have remembered that even as slimy a snake as Bryant still has fangs. But he was such a contemptible squirt that I put him out of my mind. I was more concerned with the inconvenience of this fat fool, Dubley, who was making it all the more difficult for me to cock a leg athwart Miss Fanny. I was distracted from these fine thoughts by old Morrison, who berated me for what he called "godless gallivanting after yon hissy." It seemed I should have spent the day hanging on the lips of Bentinck and Disraeli and Locke. I soothed him with a promise that I'd attend them after dinner, which I did, and steep work it was. Ireland was very much exciting them, I recall. They expected the paddies to rise at any time. Humbug, of course. You can't mount a rebellion on rotten potatoes. After that, there was fierce debate over whether the working class wanted reform, and one Hume was damned for a scoundrel, and Disraeli discoursed on the folly of some measure to exclude MPs who couldn't pay their debts. No doubt he had a personal interest there, and I sat and listened, bored to death, until Bentinck suggested we join the ladies. Not that there was much sport there either, for Mrs. Locke was reading aloud from the great new novel Jane Eyre. In another corner, the older folk were looking at picture books. Another pack of females were sewing and mumbling to each other. A couple of wild old rakes were playing backgammon, and in an adjoining salon, some hysterical bitch was singing, "Who will o'er the downs with me?"